IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 39 of the Killing It Podcast. I'm Carl, and I'm joined by Ryan and Dave. Welcome, everybody.
Hey there.
So now I can honestly say I am home for the rest of the year.
Which is a week. Your case might be a trade down from where your recent destination was, but welcome home.
Yes. Well, always love the islands, but you know, I got home and it's like, oh, this is my shower, my bed, my hot tub. Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, you know, I always like to say, like, no matter what I do, I have at least a couple of days in the car doing family visits to close out the year. So that's a requirement in my household.
Yeah, so is there snow in D.C.?
We had flurries last night. So, you know, like just enough to notice the, hey, it's snowing. And then nothing happened. Although it is, you know, 18 degrees today. As we record this, it is really quite cold.
Yeah, I watched the weather yesterday and they said after the coldest air of the year so far in the Northeast, there's going to be some freak high pressure system going across the country over the holidays. And they were projecting no white Christmas for about the eastern half of the country, big chunks of it. My kids live in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and they've been dealing with feels like minus 11 for about the last week or so. And then Christmas is going to be like 50.
I'm in a great mood. Today is a holiday. The Rise of Skywalker comes out tonight, and I have tickets for the 9:30 showing tonight. So it is an official holiday. I'm having a good day.
Very cool. So, you know, I went to University of Michigan grad school. So,
excellent. We'll have some Ann Arbor stories later on.
All righty. So we should do a show.
People come to listen to us talk about these things. Let's dive into some topics.
Right. We'll have recipes for Christmas next year. All righty. So what's the big story, Ryan, of the week?
So everybody has been seeing this on the news. It's been we live in a very small niche in the technology world as solution providers and vendors who build these kinds of sophisticated tools. When it hits the national news, we think, yay, except usually it's not a positive thing. And this time around, it's our friends at the Ring Camera Company. You might know them for their doorbells and for their interior, exterior surveillance and security cameras. But all of your relatives now know them for the really creepy hacking things that are going on and frightening young children in their bedrooms. The reason I wanted to bring this up is that it hit on a topic that, of all the things we talk about, in the top three of the things that will instantly make my blood boil is a blame the customer strategy. Hey, I sold you this camera and it doesn't come with actual security. And there are many fundamental things that other responsible companies have built into their technology. We didn't choose to do that. But, you know, it wasn't our security that was hacked. It was those terrible users. Now, the link that we're going to share in the show notes here to a column from Vice talks about just a murderer's row of bullet points of things that you could do to breach the security of one of these cameras. Would having a unique password and a multi-factor authentication on those cameras make it better? Yup, it would. But does that absolve Ring of the responsibility to actually sell a secure device? I say hell no.
Well, so, all right. I would be remiss if I didn't say, like, so I covered this on the December 16th Business of Tech. So, like, and what's funny is I said this at the time, and I would encourage people to say, hey, that's where I do it in a timely manner. But I'm going to point out, I actually almost didn't cover this story on Business of Tech. And here was my reasoning is at the time, we're using the word hack. I would challenge that it is there are two kinds of use of the word hack, and we have to differentiate. The first is where there's an actual technical flaw with a product, where there is a security vulnerability, and then that is exploited to get access to something. That's a technical failure. When social engineering is used or data is exposed, I think that's a different category, because what's happening with these Ring cameras is people are reusing their passwords, and clever dark hat people, because I don't want to call them hackers, are mining that information, and then they are brute force trying all these username and passwords and the one that gets in. It's super creepy what they're doing too, because people are logging in, they're starting to play creepy music, or they're talking to people's children. But the one that really got me is there's actually a podcast where they are doing this and recording it and putting those episodes out for people's entertainment.
Like, wow.
That's the creepy McCreepster version of what's going on here. I almost didn't comment on it because it wasn't a technical vulnerability. But what got me going, Ryan, is exactly what you were talking about. I was reading a bunch of reactions on social media by technology professionals, and it was all blame the user. It was, well, these users were stupid. They reused passwords. Oh, these users are stupid. They didn't turn on two-factor authentication. And I want to say two statements to this. I think you're 100% right. I think we need to be saying to these companies, dudes, turn this stuff on by default. Like, turn it on by default. We need to be pushing for this. But the second bit is come on, solution providers out there, blaming users, that is screaming, go sell them a solution. Right. go help them.
First thing, I remind everybody, Ring is owned by Amazon. So, you know, you can't separate those two. And Amazon has the resources to make this a better product. But the other thing is, and I would encourage people to go listen to the SMB community podcast that dropped on the 19th. That's the day that we're recording this. Mark Smith from Channel Pro and IoT Playbook talks about how you make money securing IoT devices, in particular cameras. That's literally the low fruit. And a lot of cameras have a technology that allows you to remotely control them. So There's now multiple tools that you can buy that you buy it for cheap and you sell it for ridiculous amounts of money. So you should be managing these things, and you should be doing it. And you know, after 20 years of not doing home installations, I think the time has come where there's going to be as much money in managing home networks as there is in businesses.
Well, and I think the other value you're adding is helping people put the technology into context. One of the things that frustrates me about this is, so we're, you know, Rings does have a value add, right? Hey, we're going to put cameras into your home to help you track stuff, behavior stuff. Take a moment, solution providers, to go over with your customers. You are putting a camera into your house, your most private space. You're putting cameras into your office. Like, you, that is super valuable, intimate information that you want to protect. You want to put real investment in there. And I don't think we're spending enough time with customers talking about the value of the data that we're capturing.
Well, and see, this is where it comes, you know, the big picture topic that we've discussed before becomes very small picture topic. The Internet of Things is not a science fiction concept. There will be a proliferation by the billions, literally with a B, of endpoint devices that are internet connected, sensor enabled, and remote monitorable and controllable. If you, as a managed service provider, if you, as a technology integrator, if you sell and support any of this stuff, and you are not responsible for those additional endpoints that flow traffic over your network, that's not just a missed business opportunity, that's malpractice. Like, if you have control of the customer's network, home or business, and your job is make sure it's secure, make sure bad guys don't get in, make sure we've got network access control and web filtering, and oh, by the way, I didn't bother to pay attention to your security cameras because I'm a guy who only does servers and storage. That's that's just irresponsible. And it leads me back to that conversation of where there is a need, there is an opportunity, and where people are emotional about that need, it's a value-based pricing opportunity. To Carl's point exactly, I'm not concerned at all about what it costs to buy the monitoring tools for these things. If it's attached to people could listen to your most intimate professional and personal conversations, or I could prevent that for you, people aren't going to pay $1 per month in their subscription for that. They might pay $100 per month and find it to be a perfect bargain.
You want a little prediction for the future? I would say that in the same way that we've had HIPAA come up and slap us in the face, and now we got to protect the privacy of those records, I think we're going to see the same thing with children. That, you know, if your technology is attacking other people's children or creeping in on their space, that needs to be a requirement that, you know, again, compliance is always our friend, right?
Right.
If somebody has no choice, we get to make money.
Well, it's a super logical place to start from a regulation perspective. I think we can, no matter where we fall on this, I think we can all kind of agree, like, we ought to protect children. Like, I think that's one of those areas you can start and say, you know, let's protect children who can't make the decisions about this on and open up themselves to risk. Let's make those decisions. There's a lot going on in terms of, you know, child content management online, and it's causing a lot of problems. I think this is a good logical place to start from an ethics perspective. I'm like, you know what? I'm kind of okay with a little bit of overcorrection here. It's not unhealthy. It's okay.
Well, and the way that I've always described this is that an unsecure network or device is a communicable disease. Right. If I am having a conversation with you and my network is utterly locked down and everything is buttoned up, but your camera is delivering audio and video and it's not secure, guess what? My voice carries over your network as well, and my conversation can be recorded. That proliferates into all of these control points. Just because my network is secure does not mean everybody I interact with is secure. If there is an unsecure point in the ecosystem, then we're all unsecure.
So let's leave this topic. I'm going to give one piece of very tactical advice as we move into the next piece. Solution providers, if you see a story and it makes you angry and your first inclination is to go on social media and share it with other solution providers, don't. Go do it with your customers. Start a conversation with your customers about this issue, because it's way more important there.
If it makes you mad, it's a fantastic sales pitch.
Yep.
All right. Topic two, Dave.
Well, so Ryan, I'm gonna kick it to you because you brought us kind of a couple of cool articles, and I want you to set the stage a little bit on what sparked your interest here and what, you know, throw it out for discussion.
Oh, it's digital transformation. That's what got his attention.
Well, yeah, of course. So I will, the very first reason that it got my attention was the headline said digital transformation.
And you were like, I can make Dave rant. Watch
and,
this.
And Pavlov absolutely owns this dog on that topic. Right? So I saw that. But it made a point that, again, it really hit me where I live with this translating big ideas into practical opportunities. So the articles that we will share around this are the role of networks and specifically software-defined networking as a protocol to address or enable business digital transformation, right? And so it brought me back to a whole line of thinking that goes like this. What is different about the cloud? Well, the cloud is someplace else, and it is the most mature manifestation of virtualization in infrastructure, hosting, and user experience, right? We've separated all of the services that we provide. We've abstracted them from the underlying pieces of hardware, and that's what allows us to do multi-tenant hosting. It's what allows us to bring all of that ultimate scale up, scale down in real-time capability. We all get that from a cloud point of view. By the way, the cloud is not the only network that you use as a business. You have a LAN or a WAN inside your facility, or stitched against your multiple locations in your organization. And that technology needs to be capable of scale up, scale down, real-time virtualization like that, or else you're going to have a very clunky cloud-based experience. Software-defined networking, not a new concept, but in the frame of reference of the enabling technology for digital transformation, all of a sudden those two dots connected and I went, okay, that's painfully obvious. All of us need to be selling SDN.
Okay, so I have to say, I have to make my humor statement first on this. Stringing together software-defined networking and digital transformation is all of my least favorite gobbledygook in one string of words. And here's why. Software-defined networking implies that the physical stuff goes away. Because it doesn't. You still need cables and you still need networking for that stuff to work. And then you combine it with my rants around digital transformation, which I also think is gobbledygook. We have like six words stringed together that are all not what we're saying.
I know, it's a masterclass.
It's fully buzzword compliant.
Oh my God, it's awful. Okay, so now that I have said that and said that I think software-defined networking is one of those terms that, like, it gets the concept, right? I totally understand that that it implies the concept, but it is so not actually possible. That was my makes me laugh. Now, Ryan, I would say, having put that silliness aside for a moment, I'm with you here. What actually got me a little bit more thinking was the linkage that some of these articles were trying to make between the idea, particularly the headline of, can we build trust? And their answer is sort of software-defined networking. And I looked at them and I said, okay, I don't draw those parallels between the two, because I actually think, like, for me, when you put out a headline that says, can we build trust in digital business? I go not to a technology solution at all. I go to business process and the way that you manage that and the way that you actually prove that out. Maybe, I think you're right to say those technologies are definitely a part of it, but I think you're missing a jump. I think the articles are missing a step by saying, like, hey, we want to build trust. Oh, software-defined networking. Like, I think there's a middle layer, which is, by the way, the important layer, and why I think we're talking about it here, which is you want to focus on helping customers manage their data smarter. That's clearly the theme here. And so for me, that's what jumped out.
So just a reminder for those of you who attended Channel Partners Conference, which was in April or May or whatever, the buzzword, the absolute killer buzzword of the day was SD-WAN and SDN. And so this is finally coming to fruition. The thing that's behind it is that what's keeping it at bay right now is 5G doesn't actually exist. I mean, other than an icon on a phone. You know, as soon as 5G comes out next year, I think all this stuff is going to explode. And Dave, I think you'll see some of that hardware will disappear. Once you can say, well, I'm gonna take and program all of the routing in the cloud, I no longer need a firewall on site. And that requires a level of trust that doesn't exist today. It also requires a lot of people in this industry to go back to school and learn some new technology.
Okay, so I'm gonna say, you're right, but this is what I've struggled to wrap my head around. And maybe this is my own little bit. So you say, like, oh, all those firewalls go away on site. Are we, what are we saying? Is we're saying, because you still need some physical thing that connects.
No, there's a connection.
Right, there's a connection.
Right now, if you go router, firewall, switch, and you say, well, I'm going to take the firewall, I'm going to take it out of the picture, and okay, I'm going to do all that programming in the cloud because I can, but how do you choose your cloud? How do you choose your partner? A whole lot of people are going to say, nope, I'm keeping my firewall until I have established trust. Because what happens when suddenly somebody from another country takes over my SD-WAN provider and cracks into their system and now, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean,
Dave, to your point about architecture, right? It's not about that the hardware goes away. It's that, again, my favorite buzzword, we've abstracted the technology from the physical boundaries. In other words, if you look at the article from the gentleman from Oracle, they sell big iron. right? Like they sell network infrastructure and storage technologies. They are all about selling devices, and those devices are not going to go away. It's just that, i.e. in the VMware world, right? We will take one server, one application, one instance of an OS, and we will abstract that and make it so that we can do many things. The thing that, you know, again, to borrow some really bleeding edge terminology here, what I think is interesting is self-defining, self-healing network architecture that says, Mr. Network Administrator, once you have configured a software-defined environment, you don't have to personally reroute switches. You don't have to go back into the command line interface and say, this switch is down, that switch is up, here's how we fail over. It does it on its own. The hardware is still there. It's just controlled across device boundaries for that kind of a thing. And by the way, the link that I actually got to trust is that user experience defines trust. If I go to a cloud website and I click on a button and it brings me up a 404 error, or it brings me some text-only glitchy page, I'm not putting my credit card number into that website to buy something. Like, hello. Right. Now, if you bring that back internal, and as a user, I'm going to the cloud and I'm getting this great UI, and I'm having a really good experience using all of these resources, and then I come back into the company intranet and I go to log on to my CRM, clunk, clunk, clunk. My answer is, man, my company doesn't get it. We're not keeping up. I don't trust that my company is in charge of technology. It brings user experience back to the forefront of, I don't care
what the problem with making, with equating ease of use with trust is, let's go talk about Ring, right? Yeah. Anybody can put in their credit card and make their Ring work, period. End of story, right? Because it's easy. That doesn't mean it's secure. Doesn't mean you should trust it.
You know, I have to let it go. I know I'm listening to myself. I'm like, I feel like the old man shaking his fist at the cloud the way I'm talking about this. But I think what I probably am struggling with more than anything is our jump on buzzwords too much. Like this is one of those situations where I think the concepts are 100% the ones that I embrace, and I'm just shaking my fist at bad nomenclature that is doing a really poor job of naming these things in my mind because it's implying the wrong thing.
And you're still 100% correct there, right? We exist as a podcast to kill the old fashioned ways of describing and doing technology as a service and a solution category. We're here to bring it into the new world, just with slightly less annoying buzzwords, but
less buzzy buzzwords.
The technology is still cool. Now we need to make it practical.
Yeah, I think they're good reads, though. And I think people, particularly as this is the holiday season, if you've got a little bit of downtime, the links we're including are good reads.
Right, yeah. And there's several links on this one. So speaking of the holiday season, let's go back and talk about Alexa. Oh, she who must not be named.
I put on headphones so she can't answer in my house.
I don't want to light up your house there. So Amazon has their virtual assistant can now be used to stop family disputes at Christmas by stepping in with distraction questions. So then we're going to link to this. It's actually from the Daily Mail. But basically, there's a new feature that you can enable that basically you can say, hey, change the subject. And then an AI-powered, you know, assistant is going to come in and say, you know, well, so how about them, you know, Braves or whatever? Or, you know, it'll ask a question, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? And then everybody can debate that instead of arguing about, you know, impeachment or whatever else your family argues about at Christmas. So...
This is a brilliant application of advanced technology, right? All the rocket science that goes into the smart assistant category and voice recognition as the interface, and it can be used to make it more pleasant to drink eggnog. That is a use case that I can get behind.
So I'm actually I'm totally torn on this one. Okay, so I at first glance, the technologist goes, oh, cool, a technology solution. and part of me wants to go, I actually am not sure this is a problem that needs to be solved with technology, because there's a bit of an element of don't be a dick. that actually, you know, if you're having problems in family interactions, I'm not sure yelling at Alexa is the actual answer that I want to focus on. Like, I actually think that there's probably a better solution to this than this. Now, the technologist in me goes, that's so cool. And like, we've got AI and we've put all of these bits into it. But I really question whether or not this is the best use of our technological innovation.
Dave's new business model, including technology consulting, market analysis, and family counseling.
Like,
there is something to be said for the fact that, you know, sometimes people do need to be uncomfortable with each other, and they do need to learn how to bite their tongue, and they do need to learn how to get along with their own family. On the other hand, you know, if people are, you know, throwing fists, it might be time to, you know, have your digital assistant bring up a topic about what's your favorite animal.
Yeah. I mean, like, if this was presented to me like a game, like give us a debate topic, that's different than the command being change the subject. Like, I'm really struggling here. Like, I really want to like this more than I do.
Would you like it more if it had Samuel L. Jackson's voice?
Everything is better with Samuel L. Jackson's voice. Like, 100%, 100%. I spent the 99 cents right away to get my devices to do it, and he's so much fun to have him tell me the weather. Always better. But, yeah, this is, again, I have these debates all the time in my head about what I want these technologies to be doing. You know, I've struggled with this idea that we have the greatest minds, in technology are spending a ton of time thinking about better ways to sell us another car. Like, is this really where we want these engineering efforts to be done? Kind of cool. Like, I get it, but I don't know.
See, maybe it should have a limit that you can only change the subject, once an hour. And if you try to do it more than that, then you get a podcast on, you know, how to get along with your family.
Well, I mean, that could help.
But yeah. I think we're going back to the underlying question of how do you get inexperienced users who don't have a job requirement to open up and be willing to utilize new technologies, especially new interface technologies, right? When we went from the keyboard to the mouse, when we go from the mouse to the voice, when we go from all of this touch interactive physical control to a world where, as I was reading yesterday, ubiquitous computing, to take another new buzzy phrase, is the idea that everything around you will be sensor enabled in an Internet of Things way and voice enabled. And you won't have to have a device necessarily, but in the purely Star Trek kind of a way, you just speak to the surroundings and something will hear you and interact with you. In order to get people to give their credit card number online for e-commerce transactions, one of the most effective early stage use cases was games, right? The Zynga folks, point click, build a farm. That was something that got people to a place of, I will give you all of my personal data for entertainment purposes. I think if you want everybody in the world to engage with their voice, has to be fun to begin with, trivial, something easy, and then eventually, by the way, this is the way we control the world around us. No more fingers and keyboards.
So I like that argument. So you're saying basically this is a system of training people to use voice commands and becoming much more comfortable talking to their devices.
That's an interesting angle. I hadn't thought of it from that perspective.
If you think of it, guys, David, you're the best example of this, right? You have a smart home. You are comfortable speaking to your environment, right? When you go outside into the world and you are surrounded by other people in a public or semi-public environment, are you personally comfortable saying, hey, device, let me do this thing? Or do you revert to keyboard commands?
Oh, I totally revert for privacy reasons. Like,
need further training on being comfortable just saying out loud, computer.
We're in the nuclear vessels.
Yes. I mean, and by the way, the other term I've heard there, it's not just ubiquitous computing, but ambient computing as well is the other version of that for those right. that are tracking the buzzword bingo. Well,
so I just in the last 2 weeks rented 3 different cars and none of them allowed me to say, just change the channel, find me some Christmas music, right? I have to like plug in my phone and get it all connected and do all this other stuff. And there should be a more universal interface where I just get in a car and I tell it what I want and it gives it to me.
Well, I mean, look, I've always dreamed of an environment that is that kind of computing. I'd love to be able to put my phone down on a desk, the desk become the keyboard, and I interact with my computer on in a secure way on any device, or be able to have my phone smart enough that I could sit down at a workstation, it securely bond with the workstation at some level, then my stuff is there, but then I take it away. But of course, those are untrusted devices, and that's the problem. And by the way, we haven't even solved the like, hey, Bluetooth stuff doesn't pair right. So like, this is, you know, like we're a long way from my like vision of a proper ambient computing.
And I'm the guy who has in fact logged into that computer in the lobby of the hotel to not just print a boarding device back in the day when it wouldn't work on my cell phone, but actually send an important, valuable business-related email, and then, you know, everything short of F-disking that computer to try and scrub it when I was logging off because I wanted to make sure it didn't have any residue of my personal data. That's coming. Like, you're coming to a world where your data will follow you in that ambient way. And I think it's fantastic. I find that to be absolutely brilliant. But voice will be the principal interface. I buy that argument, Dave. I think Pavlov needs to control us a little bit more effectively to respond.
So the next step is to get the implant so that I can, you know, my data is always identified with me, but that means that, you know, instead of changing the subject, somebody could say, Alexa, shock Carl in the neck.
I mean, look, I am a technologist, but the last thing I want is somebody programming software that's connected to my body. Like, it's just, I'm in technology. I know how this stuff works. I do not want to patch my implant. That seems like a really bad idea.
So we can follow up on that with another show. Hey, we're kind of out of time here, but I do want to encourage people. Give us your ideas. Give us your feedback. And, you know, I know you got nothing else going on for the holidays. So please tune in because our show on the 31st, one of the things we want to do, we don't do an end of year wrap up, 10 best, 10 worst, all that other crap. But we do want to give you some a little bit of focus about technology and kind of wrap up what we've been doing with this podcast since May. And thank you all for being here. So please share with your friends, give it a thumbs up, all that happy stuff.
We super appreciate it. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for your attention. Tell your friends if you think we're doing something interesting, because we really are trying to change this conversation, and that involves getting more and more people involved.
And, you know, if you do happen to have a little downtime with an eggnog in your hand over the next week or so, you know, there are 38 additional episodes of this podcast. And you could go back and get all caught up, and you would know exactly what all of our silly inside jokes are about and be prepared to be an expert in 2020.
Very good. And that concludes episode 39 of the
Killing It
podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.